Welcome back, everyone. Take your seats. Final presentation of today by Albert
Graef. Right.
About
like graphs, but with two special notes, so these two dots.
Which is titled...
There. Yes. You just read.
Pure data.
Philippe, thanks a lot for the very kind introduction and the suspiciously short introduction, I might say. So I'm from the University of Mainz. Sorry, I forgot to put my affiliation on there, but I'm from I'm basically the head of the computer music department there, which is part of the musicology at Mainz, and which is kind of unusual construction, but we have that in Germany. And so I'm involved in a few projects which turn out to be useful for some people, and I also use them myself in teaching computer music. And one of these projects is PerData, which isn't my project, it's Jonathan Wilke's project, and it's based on the project called PDL2Org by Itzo Bukvic from Virginia State, which exists at least since 2010. But this is a new version of it. It's a few years old. I first heard rumors about it in 2015. I will tell you more about the history later on. But I got involved with it because I wanted to use it. And that's always, you scratch some itch. That's how we do stuff in open source. And so this is what I'm going to talk about today. I gave a talk about PerData at LAC 2017 at Saint-Étienne, which was more about the technical background and the implementation issues. And this will should be a short introduction again to PerData for those of you who don't know it yet. But then I will go hands-on, and there will be no more theory and no history and stuff like that, and I just show how to use it. And I decided to go for the workshop format for this so that I can show you a few things so that you can pick it up, and if you want, you can also follow along on your own computer. So on this link, I didn't know whether there would be some downloadable area here for the conference, so I put it up on GitHub, don't tell anyone. But you find the stuff on this link, which you have to type one time, or you just go to GitHub and search for Agrave, and then for the LAC 18 JIT repository. And you find accompanying materials and also the slides themselves, and then you also have all the links in the slides for the remaining stuff. And there the commands are in the slides, so you can, if you want, you can really follow along and build PerData together with me. And so I have an agenda. The goals will be to show you first what PerData is, talk a bit about it, and then to install a light version of it, because if you build it from source, it takes a long time if you build it with all the externals, which is basically what PD Extended and PDL2Org used to be. They include very many externals, very many dependencies also, and we're only going to build a version which corresponds pretty closely to vanilla PD, which is a much smaller package. And that's what we're going to build here, but of course at home you can also build the full version. That needs maybe a quarter of an hour, depends on your computer how fast it is. And but I wanted to show you how you actually compile the thing, because that used to be quite difficult, but we've worked on some of that. So, too early. Then I'm going to show you how to get it set up for the first time. and start using it. I'm just going to do some standard stuff here, build a little synthesizer so that you see how the stuff all works, how the zooming works and stuff like that. And afterwards, I want to go into two special areas. One is scripting with PDE, with PerData. When I say PDE, I always mean this version here. And this will be about Lua, which we there's a very nice plugin by Claude Allen. I surely butchered that name. Is he here? There you are. So glad to meet you. It's a wonderful external. I've learned very much also from reading the code of that. But we included with PerData now, so that you can start programming your own objects right away. If you need to go more in depth and do more special stuff, which you can't really do with a PDE patch very well, then you're better off using a nice scripting language than diving into C, because C, of course, it's the best possibility if you want something which runs really efficiently. But if your programmer time is programming time is more valuable, then you're better off using a scripting language. And the best integration we have there is with the Lua scripting language, which is also a very nice scripting language in my opinion. And I'm going to show you how to use that, and we play with some small examples there. And yes, the last one then is, I also want to dive a bit into SVG data structures. I think that I'm going to butcher yet another name, Joe. He's Pace. He's going to give, I think, a talk about doing stuff with PDE and data structures tomorrow. So if you want to go more in depth, you can do it there, but that will be only about the vanilla PDE data structures. In PerData, we have some extended capabilities because we can use SVG objects there, and that's what I'm going to show here. So, you probably have heard about PDE, but nevertheless, for those of you who haven't, it's one of, you could say, there's a direct heritage which goes back to the good old music languages there. The music language is where it all started in the 1950s. They were done by Max Matthews, and what came from that is Music 1, 3, 4, 5, and then various other versions, and that led to C Sound, of course. And another branch on that tree are the graphical languages, which are based on the concepts, on the notions of the music languages. And the first important development there in the world of graphical real-time computer music systems is, of course, Max, which was written by Miller Puckett. And Miller then also went on and wrote PDE, which is a kind of open source variation of Max, if you can, at least you can see it that way. They're kind of similar, and you see that in the beginning they even had the same objects, so you could even exchange patches between them. That has changed in the meantime. But anyway, we're talking about graphical patching possibilities here, so you program in a way that's very visual and intuitive, but can be hard at times when things become more complicated, and that's when you use a scripting language. But many standard signal processing tasks can be done very conveniently in this graphical fashion, and that's why they're so popular, I guess. So another special feature we have in PDE is the kind of deterministic processing we have there. I get asked by people, "Is Luigi? Where's Luigi?" He wanted to come to the talk, but apparently he hasn't arrived yet. I had a discussion with him, and he asked me why is there no multi-threading. For some stuff, it's really convenient to have that, because you can then load sound files in the background, and you when it's ready, and then you start using it. But Miller took a very specific stance to stay away from multi-threading. So that means if you actually need several threads, you have to start basically the PD engine multiple times. But that means that in every instance of the engine, everything runs purely sequential. So in principle, you can figure out which operations are carried out at which time. And he considered that more convenient, more important than having the extra convenience of having some stuff done in the background, because anyone who's programmed multi-threading stuff knows that this can become very messy if you don't know when different parts of the program become ready to deliver their data, and then strange things start to happen. Okay. So that's one aspect. There's interfaces to hardware via MIDI and OSC, various other hardware like remote controls or joysticks and stuff like that, which all get abused for musical purposes, of course. We have video and 3D graphics support through the GEM library. Johannes isn't here this year, but that was done by the IEM in Graz. And Miller's PD, the vanilla PD version as we call it, is available on Linux, Mac and Windows. It's cross-platform, which is very nice for people who are not like we are Linux fans, but prefer to use a Mac or even a Windows system. And there are various from the, almost from the beginning, not quite, but there were various side projects where people try to improve PD in various ways. And one which was particularly successful was PD Extended by Hans-Christoph Steiner. And he started kind of distribution, this PD Extended distribution, which had some improvements in the GUI, but also very many plugins. We call them externals in PD. And the externals are there to give you more possibilities. So some people have already written some stuff, which is useful for other people. And then, like a DSP plugin in a DAW, you can load them in PD. But this is a special plugin format. So these externals are on board with PD Extended and all distributions which derive from that. And one fork which was also quite successful was PDL.org. And this is what then eventually became what we call PerData now. So Jonathan gave it that name. So it's he apparently loves cats. And so it's supposed to induce purring sounds in your brain if you hear this name. I sometimes butcher the PerData name and just say PD. But since we're only talking about PerData after this slides, now I can just call it PD. Otherwise, I always stumble about the purr part. So, but you had a very very good pronunciation of the name. I just can't emulate it, so I'm sticking to PD. PerData is PDL.org 2, basically. So the genealogy is that Jonathan, that Hans-Christoph Steiner started PD Extended already in 2002, and that was one of the longest running flavors of PD. It basically it stopped being updated in at the end of 2013. I think there were still some commits in the repository at the beginning of 2014, but that is the time when PD Extended died for reasons I don't know. I was told that it's probably because of not enough contributions. One guy who wanted to contribute was is Itzo Bukvic from Virginia Tech, and he submitted patches to PD Extended, but Hans-Christoph Steiner wouldn't take them all, and so Itzo Itzo then decided to start his own project, his own fork of PD Extended, which then became PDL2.org. And that ran only on Linux because of some libraries which were needed on the, I think, mainly on the TKLTK side. So there were some dependencies which weren't easily available on Windows. And then we had the Jonathan Wilkes then stepped up and in 2015 started writing his port, where he did some terrible things to PDE. He ripped out the old TKLTK part and replaced it with modern web technology. And that's what Perdata is. So it has a better GUI because it uses an existing web toolkit to do the GUI, and it's also based on a more modern language, JavaScript, which not everyone likes, but if you like Lua, you're likely to like JavaScript a little bit at least too, because the two are in very many places very similar, except that JavaScript has all these curly braces, which it inherited from C, of course, or from Java, and Java inherited it from C++, which inherited it from C. I mean, can only speculate. These curly braces languages are all around today. We don't have them in Lua. In Lua, we have proper delimiters, but otherwise, the languages in the object system, they are very similar. And that's no accident, because Brendan Eich learned from Lua there. So the idea behind all these distributions was that the batteries are included, so you have a large collection of bundled externals. And one thing that's also included is the PDE documentation project help patches, which were created at some point to improve the documentation so that you have cross-links between different help patches, and also you can link to URLs and stuff like that. So it's a certain format. There's also some metadata, so you can better search for stuff. And the other thing that already PD Extended started, and which was then improved upon with PDL2.org, and then further improved in Perdata, are the editing features. Parts of the GUI, which seems trivial, but if you're able to resize a slider just by dragging one corner around, it's much easier than if you have to go in the properties dialog and dial in some numbers until you're content with the result. So I think we all agree on that. That's what graphical user interfaces are for. But vanilla PDE doesn't have that luxury. You really have to put in the numbers, and it's even worse with those graph on parent areas, where in vanilla you really have to guess what coordinates you need, and then you look at the result and then you type in some new coordinates. So that's much easier with PDL2.org and its descendant Perdata. Now in Perdata itself we have some further improvements. I already said it has a better GUI. I hope we agree on that, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so if you don't like it, then you can just go on using vanilla PDE. It's still available, so. The GUI is written completely in JavaScript now, so it's easier maintainable, because TKLTK, let's face it, it's not a very nice language, and it's also getting a bit old in the tooth. JavaScript is a more modern language. It has been improved over the years. It's very well tested. There are very many frameworks. There's very good documentation. So for me, there isn't a question that JavaScript is superior to TKLTK there, even though TKLTK was a great tool in the 90s and even in the 2000s, but not in the 2010s anymore. And we have a new help browser. I'm going to show that. It's very simple to use. We have multi-level zooming, which you already made good use of. Even that feature alone would have sold Perdata to me, because in an education situation, you have to do that all the time. And Vanilla PD finally got the zooming feature as well, but it's only two stages. So you have it very big or very small, and there's nothing in between. And here we have proper zooming, which comes all from the web framework. So you basically get that for free. We can print to PDF. I don't know whether that, the last time I tried in Vanilla, it would produce a strange PostScript file. PostScript, for those of you who don't remember anymore or who weren't born then, was a kind of precursor to PDF, but everybody uses PDF nowadays. And then we have these improved SVG graphics and data structure. So I'm going to talk about that later. That's a pretty important part of it for the future development. Despite all these improvements, we're still generally compatible with Vanilla PD, and that's also important for us, but we're not striving for 100% bug compatibility. There are some oddities in Vanilla PD, which Miller just cannot change anymore because he's very focused on keeping stuff backward compatible, and he must, because there is musical works written in PD, and if he changes it around every now and then, all the old works won't be playable anymore. But we're free from that, because if people are using these legacy features, then there's always Vanilla, which works for that, and we can say, okay, we can fix up bend in, bend out, because it's not sensible the way it's done in PD, and we just fix it. And we still have a minus legacy option. If you really need this bug compatibility, then you can, at the moment, more or less achieve it too with Perdata. But we don't guarantee that. It's minor bugs, it's minor things in the bounding boxes of some of the GUI elements. You'd have to ask Jonathan for all the gory details, but he's done very many small changes there. But otherwise, we're still compatible with Vanilla. You can read any patch written in Vanilla in PDL2Org and also in Perdata and vice versa. Whether you have all the externals that you need is another question. But the incompatibility, there are some potential incompatibilities also between two different Vanilla installations if you have different sets of externals installed. If you don't have PD Lua installed, you can't run Lua scripts as objects. That's not possible. So, yeah, just the looks of it. The Jaggies here in Vanilla and Extended, which is still pretty close to Vanilla. And then that's PDL2Org, which looks pretty much already like Perdata. But one thing I stressed here, this is in the same resolution. So you see, I've zoomed in this patch. It's the same patch as this one there. And you can just zoom in and out. And it looks, but it looks still basically the same. The devils are, as always, in the details. So why Perdata? Well, of course, you can always ask a new program version, why did we do it? Itzo was very keen on getting a multi-platform, a cross-platform version of PDL2Org, because many of the students he teaches, and I can attest to that as well, probably you too, that most of our students, they think Linux is nice, but at home they run Windows or they have their MacBooks. And so we needed something that would run on all of them. And of course, Vanilla PD fits that bill. It is cross-platform, but PDL2Org never was. So there was this idea of getting it running on all platforms. And there were, as I said, there were some TKL libraries which weren't easily available on Windows. In principle, they should have been portable, but they weren't. The binaries were ages old, only 32 bits, and crusty and dusty. And so nobody wanted to touch that stuff anymore, at least not in the community there. And so what Jonathan set out to do instead was to use Node WebKit. which is kind of, you probably heard of Electron nowadays. There are very many of these so-called portable applications, which basically bundle a web framework with a JavaScript engine, and then your application is written in JavaScript, at least the GUI. And that's exactly what he did as well. There were some technical reasons why he chose Node WebKit over Electron, but I don't want to go into that here. So what you basically have there is Node.js. Node.js is a JavaScript runtime, which then allows you to put in as many libraries as you need. So it's basically a JavaScript package manager, and you bundle that with a browser engine and the JavaScript executor, and then you have a complete running environment, and the stuff will run the same whether it's on Mac or Linux or Windows. So, since last year, we've been working on some stuff. As usual, Jonathan has done most of the work, but because I was busy with other stuff, I couldn't do as much work as I wanted, but we've made progress. Jonathan did a lot of bug fixes and performance improvements, and I made some improvements in the build system, which is now much more robust, and we also have a top-level makefile. If you've tried building PDL2Org or PerData before, you probably appreciate the effort that went into this. And we continue to backport stuff from vanilla. We want to be current with the engine. We don't port any GUI stuff. It's just about the engine, so that we're as close as reasonably possible to what vanilla does there, because the engine is still mightily important, and Miller is still with his colleagues and friends still keeps developing that. And at this point, we're about at, engine-wise, we're about at 0.480. This is PDL2Org 2.5. And that's basically where we are now. And we can, if someone notices that any important feature in the audio engine is missing, just file a bug report and we just pull over the code. And there's, we have our first Google Summer of Code project this year. Jonathan initiated that. So a guy, a student from India, Pranay Gupta, is currently working on double precision support. There's some branch somewhere with code for double precision support in vanilla PD, but I don't think that it ever made it or was ever considered for the main tree. And we're going to integrate that, so that is basically afterwards a switch on the command line, and you can choose whether you want to run with double precision data or single precision, which is the default and still the only one for vanilla as it stands now. So, now I want to show a bit of, are there any questions about, I tried to summarize all the stuff which I explained much more in much more detailed way in my talk last year, but if there's any question at this point, you might as well ask it. Okay, now we're going into the installation stuff, and first I wanted to point out some links to you. Jonathan develops everything on his own GitLab instance there, and you'll find it in the slides, so you don't have to type those. You just find the slides on my GitHub, like 18 repository, and then you can just click on them. My username or AG, okay, I can just go back to the slide. There it was. Yeah, okay, these German names. They're not very international. So there we go. That's where the actual development takes place. That's also where I put my pull requests if I want Jonathan to integrate something. Jonathan still is the benevolent dictator of the project, so he has to approve everything which goes in. But he does so much more easily than Miller, out of necessity. I explained why. And there's this GitHub mirror, which I volunteered to put up so that we have something on this major repository where all the open source projects are, which will now be bought by Microsoft. And well, there we still are. I don't know whether we'll still be there next year, but for the moment it's still there. And we just will. I've been on a couple of sites. GitLab is nice, but it's slow. And that's the thing. And unless we get something like GitHub, which is blazingly fast, you will see some people change, but not everybody. But I'll have to think about it. I just moved stuff over from Bitbucket, but for the time being, I'm waiting how this turns out before we move. So it's there. There's a website there. You can read some information, some background stuff, a bit an introduction, and you can all find that there. And there's repositories I set up. You find also downloads there, and these are the downloads that that Jonathan himself produces. Basically, that stuff that comes out of our continuous integration. So the stuff gets compiled constantly, and the binaries we have for all platforms then get uploaded to GitHub when we do a release. But I've also have my own repositories, mainly for my students, but everybody can use them. They're public. For the Arch user repositories, there are packages, and I also have these packages as binaries in our binary repositories, and the same stuff exists also as PPAs for Ubuntu. So you could now just use that, yeah?
I use apt-get install in Debian. Should I better take the title from the website?
You can try, depends on what Debian version it is, but then I'd say that probably the latest PPAs could work. 1804. So you find that under this URL here, and then you just click through to the Bionic repositories. You can try, but you can also compile, like I'm going to show. 0.47. You're on the total wrong side. That's vanilla, and that's an old vanilla version. Yeah, that's Debian. Switch to Arch, and you'll never have to use old software again. No, there are reasons that you want to use Debian and want to be stable, but you can try my. Well, I could just show them. Let me click through there. So there we are, and there's some text there, hopefully. So there's the README there, and there are some PPAs there. And I forgot to update these. Sorry about that. But you can go on this Launchpad link, which takes you to my page on Launchpad. And don't I have an internet here? Yes, I have. Let me try that again. It's on Bitbucket. It's not on GitHub, so it can't be Microsoft fault. Launchpad offline. Can someone try whether you can go to Launchpad? Either I don't have a name server here or something. So then it's just on my end here, because I'm for... I am in there. Seabase public IPv6? Without the IPv6. Seabase public. Okay, let me try that. Okay, but you should be... Bionic 1804, that's the newest, and I think the newest Debian release is Stretch, I think. And that should be almost compatible. Maybe you have to go back to 1710 or something like that. I'm not sure about that. I don't use Debian myself, so I'm sorry that I can't help with that. But if you go to the other website, which I can't get to, No, he's back to that other. I can't log into it. I'm not sure what's happening there, but this other link will take you to the GitHub mirror, will take you to the downloads, where there are some Stretch binaries. Maybe that's better, working better for you. Otherwise, you can try the Johannes Gutenberg University repos, which I keep, where there's, at least in the older versions of the repository, also the classic PDL-to-org still, and a poor data version, which is designed to be installable in parallel to that older version. But otherwise, it's pretty much the same. So if you find something on the download side, there are MacBook binaries there, there are Windows binaries there, and there are also various Debian and Ubuntu binaries there. Try those. If they don't work, try my PPAs. Okay. Yeah, that was pretty much what I wanted to say. So, but now we're going to install the thing from source. So if you followed the link that I gave at the beginning of my presentation, building the full package will take quite some time. So I'm only building a light version here, but we'll augment it with a build of PDLua so that I can show you the PDLua stuff. And the prerequisites, as I wrote in the paper, which didn't end up in the proceedings, but is probably downloadable somewhere, I hope. At least what you need, basically, is a build system. So you need GNU Make, you need the GNU C compiler, you need Git to clone the repository, you need ALSA, Jack, and Lua 5.3. That's the newest official version. So Claude, as he left it, I think it was compatible with Lua 5.2 or even 5.1. It was then ported, I think that might have been Mr. M.R. Peach's work. Pardon? Martin Peach, right. Martin Peach then ported it to 5.3, and I then, that's basically the status that you find it in the repository that Johannes Smolnik is maintaining for Debian, and I cloned his repository and updated the code for Lua 5.3, so it's working with 5.3 now. And that's probably the version that you want to use. And okay, you also need the development packages which go along with these libraries, and then you should be able to compile it, and I'm going to show you how now. So, all right, let's open another shell. And just clone the repository. That's the other one. So that's on my mirror. If you want, you can also use directly clone it from Jonathan's GitLab, but I'm using that now. I don't have a network connection working. Do we have a network cable here? No. Pardon? Yeah, I also have my smartphone. I can tether that as well. Okay, let me see. Ich war, es hat eben noch funktioniert. Weiß auch nicht, woran es liegt. too many waves. Let me see whether that works. Well, I don't actually have to show you how to clone something, do I? No, I'm still on that connection where I don't have a name server. Let me disconnect from that. There's my Moto G. So there we go. Okay, you clone that. Not the fastest connection here. Well, I have a 3G connection. Probably okay, there we go. Okay, I'm going to switch to my already checked out repository now, because otherwise it's only, you will see if you try that yourself, as soon as you start make now, it's going to download some other stuff, submodules and some the Node WebKit binaries, so that it can combine them with the application. And therefore, I'm just going to show the compilation process now. As I said, you probably will have to wait for it to download some additional stuff, which I have already on my hard disk, so it won't be necessary in this, in my build, but it shows what it compiles. And the command is make for building everything, and then sudo make install to install it, but that make will take a long time. And therefore, I'm doing the make lite, which creates a vanilla-like version of Perdata. And I only included the PD Lua external, so that we also have the PD Lua plugin loader installed and couldn't do the Lua stuff. So it does quite a bit of stuff behind the scenes. Actually, there's still Itzo's build script under the hood, but you just type this make command and it will take care of all that, and it will compile the source. And then if you're doing this on Debian and have the Debian packaging tools installed, it will build a Debian package right away. Otherwise, it will leave it in some location where you can then just install it with make install. So that's done. So that's pretty quick. Let me quickly install that. Sudo make install. You have to type your password, and now it's installed. Okay, for launching it, we can just launch it as pdl2.org. Oh, that's not what I wanted. Let me go to the examples and open a terminal there. So you find these examples in the repository that I pointed to at the beginning of the talk. And now I'm going to launch. So normally when installed, you get the program name pdl2.org, because that's what it still is. It's just version 2 of it. And then you can specify some additional options. And the options I gave in the slides are should have put my mouse there. Minus jack in order to launch with jack support, and minus lib pdlua to also launch the Lua external. If you built the full version. All the PDLua will of course be included and will also be loaded by default. But since we all only built the minimal version, we still have to do something there. And so what I'm going to do now is launch Jack through my beloved QJack control. Let me launch that once again. And tell it to use that. And tell it to use the PD, what was that, PD Lua without a hyphen? Yeah, I think that should be it. There we go. And you see down here, it's using Lua version 5.3. And it's also using a special JavaScript interface, which allows it to tie into PDL2.org and open the Lua files in the text editor. So let me first check that I actually have any sound here. I do. We hear it. Let me check my MIDI. That's not connected. Why not? Stuff just doesn't work. And I know why. Because we're launching it that's the initial launch. I just told it to use Jack, and I told it to load the Lua stuff. And what we have to do now is still configure something. So let's look into the preferences. You can also launch that dialog with Control P. You see, okay, we already have Jack. I can leave that as it is. If I have more channels, 8-channel audio interface, I would change these here. But I can leave that as it is. And then we have the MIDI interface here. And you see it has 0 ports, so it can't connect to anything. So I'm just going to use 1 port for now. And then let's just quickly run through the other tabs as well. So you have the possibility to change some stuff in the GUI. For instance, if you want to save and load zoom levels, you can enable that here. And you can also disable this if you want the help browser to search more than the doc hierarchy. Then you get all kinds of help patches, not only the stuff that comes with vanilla PD. And there are various other options here, of course. We all like to play with themes, so maybe I want to have look a bit differently. That's CSS stuff, basically. You can write your own themes with no problem. I'm sticking to the default here. In the startup part, you see the search paths for the libraries, not much here because we didn't install much. It's much fuller if you install the full version, and we have all the libraries that are preloaded. So this libdir loader actually is a little helper, which comes from PD Extended, which looks up stuff in library directories. And so it looks at the search paths, and if it finds some libraries there, it may load them. And PDDP is the support for the Pure Data documentation project, and PDLua is the PDLua external that we PDLua extension that we just loaded. So I'm just going to push OK now, and now it's saved. So next time I launch it, it will have the same options again. And we should now be able to see, yeah, my KeyStation is connected to Pure Data, and my VDBud, which I will use later on to play the Jamstick, is connected as well. So let me try the MIDI again. That works, and this works too. Okay. So that was the initial setup. There's not much more you usually have to do. And, well, of course, if you have different MIDI devices and so on, you have to decide how to configure that. If you're on the Mac or on Windows, you'll see different devices there. Here we're just using ALSA, so I'm doing all the connections via QJack control, Ruiz tool. Okay. That was the initial setup. Building, installing, initial setup. help browser. Let's look, take a brief look at that as well. So we, Jonathan did that, and he went for really minimalistic design. So there's a little box here where you can type search terms, and then there's kind of file browser dialog here where you can go to specific help patches. And then there are these sections, which are just clickable links. So if I want to learn about PDL2Org data structures, the special ones, I just click there, and there's a section with help patches there. And if I click on one of these, let's maybe go back. You can do that by just cleaning this field there. And let's go to the standard data structure stuff. I could maybe take a look at how they are done, and then I'm presented with this help patch. So we're going to take a brief look at that later on, and if I have enough time. And the other possibility is to just type a search term. For instance, if I'm looking for something specific, let's say DAC tilde, then I just type that in and press return, and then I'm presented with all the search results, and then I just click on that, and then the help patch opens. And of course, you also have the possibility, which you have in all the PD flavors, to just do a right click on the object and select help, and then you get a help patch again. So these help patches are real patches. They are not just looking pretty. You can use them, you can copy stuff from them, and so that's the way this works. And okay, I'm going to keep this open for later. And now there's some stuff missing there because we only have the minimal version installed, but never mind now. Next thing, creating and editing patches. Let's do a little patch. For instance, I could now do maybe take a look at the synth patch. I have a synth0.pd with some infrastructure in there. It's just a very basic example so that you see how this all works. I want to have a synthesizer with polyphony. So I have four voices there. The poly object does the voice allocation, so it decides which voice each note gets played on. And then I pack those numbers, which is the voice number, the note number, and the velocity into a single list. That's done by the pack object there. And then I want to route that through to the different voices. And the voices I have prepared as well. And you can just type voice, and then you will get a patch. Which has all the right stuff in it already. Let's take a brief look at this patch. So there's not a lot of magic there. I'm unpacking the note number and the velocity over there. So two different numbers. The velocity, the note number I have to calculate the frequency from. That's what this M2F object does. And here I have another object, which here this number is the velocity. No, actually, I already divided that by 127 up there. So I'm getting a normalized loudness value here. And I'm just, what I'm doing here is to do a little poor man's envelope. That's just going to fade in or out in 50 milliseconds, depending on whether the velocity is zero or something greater than zero. And I'm using the line tilde object here to do a quick and dirty envelope. And then I'm multiplying some kind of table oscillator with that and send out the audio signal there from the subpatch. And of course, it looks like I need to define the table wave there in order to actually make this work. But one thing I want to draw your attention to here is that if you start editing this subpatch, of course, you have this rectangle here, and you can move your graph on parent area. You don't have to do it by typing numbers, because the way that's done is you have to go in here and decide about the width, height, and the X and Y offsets. We don't want to do it that way. And that's much more convenient to do it like this. And I can also change the size of the area. So, and as soon as I save this and get out of here, my changed graph and parent area is visible. So now I can also, of course, duplicate this object. 1, 2, 3, I want 4 voices. I just, it cascades them like that by default, but if I just select them all and press Control Y, which is for tidy up, once and twice, then it's all nicely aligned. So we have some better tidying options, or at least different tidying options than vanilla. And another thing that's nice to have is that I can now select this object as well. I always forget how to do it. Shift click. And now I can just connect the first outlet here with these 4 inlets, and it will distribute the outlets automatically. That's called what it's called intelligent patching. So there are ways to do multi patches, and I now need to, because Philippe starts looking very urgently, because we already I'm in the schedule until 18:30, I think, because I got a time slot for 90 minutes. I don't want to drag it out as much if I can avoid it, but there's some concert coming up at what? Pardon?
9
p.m. So there's still some time to get lunch, even if I need maybe 20 or 25 more minutes, okay? All right, so we can also select these 4 here and connect them all in one go to one object like this. Or if you prefer, you can also do it like this. You just drag the first cable and then you press Shift. And now, oh no, that's the wrong way around, sorry. But what you can do, for instance, is if you have one object, like let's say, pack, well, let's say just plus, and you want connect, what you shouldn't do, let's duplicate these. So if you want to connect 2, that was not what I wanted. I wanted to do this, and let's get rid of these again. If I wanted to connect all of these, this outlet to all of these inlets, the first way to do that is actually to select these and then go like this. You shouldn't actually do this. PD users, I'm glad that Johannes isn't here. If he's listening on the stream, he's probably screaming by now, because you're not supposed to do this, because the order in which these control data are transferred is not defined in this case, actually. That's one of the dark corners of PD, which I'm not going to talk about today. But I just wanted to show you how to do this multi-patching thing, which ITSO prefers to call intelligent patching. The other way to do this is to just draw the first cable and then press Shift, and then you're getting another cable. It's a bit difficult. With the mouse, it's easier to do. I have to juggle with the mouse pad and the Shift key now. So I got a second one, and then I can drag that over here, and I can also drag it over here the way I want it. And as soon as you leave the Shift key alone, then it stops. So you can do multi-connections in one go. But that just as an aside, because I wanted to show you some of the editing possibilities. And of course, stuff is possible, like, I think that you can even do that with a vanilla Bible now, but if I wanted to drag it out like this, this is also can all be done graphically. And you can also resize those sliders graphically. I can make that as big as I want, and I don't have to go into the properties. So, this looks funny by now. Okay, what I still need to do to make this work, of course, I need to connect the other outputs again. So let's quickly do that. So now all the voices outputs are connected to my main amplifier, so to speak, which is connected to the slider. I have my polyphonic voice allocation set up. I have my voices here, which in order to produce any sound, I still have to define the wavetable in there. And that was called, I called it, you can see it here, this tap osc object does table oscillation with interpolation, think cubic interpolation. That's why it needs some extra points in it. But that will all be taken care of automatically. And I need to tell it the wavetable it's going to use. And the way to get a wavetable, like in any other PD version, is you draw an array. You need to name it, and I already anticipated the name wave. You can then decide on how you want it to be rendered, whether the contents should be saved with the patches or stuff. We just leave that as the default. And the size I am not going to change here now either, because I'm now going to define some contents. You can draw into these wavetables. You can do it graphically, but it's much more convenient if you already know what kind of waveform you need to load it into the wavetable. And one way to do it is to, that comes from the music programs way, way back, is that we want to calculate some sum of signs, a sign sum. That's the message you get, these message flags you get with Control 2. And then you have the possibility to specify the size of the table. Let's make it always nice to have something with a power of 2. And then, so it's going to be nominally 8,192 samples now. And then now specifying which overtones I want. Let's do some kind of strange organ. First, 1 second I'm leaving at 0, and then the third one, let's make the 0.33. I'm leaving the next even partial at 0, and the next one at 0.2. So it's kind of like a square wave, but only with the first few overtones. And then I just send this message. You see, I can, that also works with other PD versions. I can select this message and then type Control 1 to insert an object, and it will be connected automatically. And I can just send this to the wavetable, which I named wave. And then I switch from the edit mode with Control E to the operate mode, and then I can click on this, and I must have mistyped something. Yeah, I left, I forgot the 0 there. Okay, that should have looked more like a square wave. There we go. You already noticed, of course, before I admitted to have made. Okay, you see, it's a kind of a square wave, but it's a band-limited square wave because we only have finitely many, many overtones. So, and I can now, I just need to switch on DSP, which is this switch, which is already. And never mind all the error messages. That was because I inserted all these voices before defining the wavetable, which they were using. And I have some more infrastructure here. When I receive controller 123, which is all nodes off, then I'm going to just shut down the all nodes which are still playing, which is kind of useful if you're using MIDI players or something like that. So, and I should now be able to play it. And maybe we can also have some sound, please. Riot has disappeared. Okay, I'm not having any sound anymore. I used to have it. Let me test that once again. I do have sound. And what's not working here is probably... No, okay. I did something which I don't understand. Seems to work. I'm not the greatest piano player, so let me play some MIDI for you. Sounds about right. So that was just a quick example where I want... I forgot to show one thing, of course, is... Let's make this patch bigger, and now I want to show it really big to the students. And then I have various zoom modes, which you can find in the view menu. First of all, I can just go for optimal zoom, which is just pick whatever fills most of the dimensions. So optimal zoom would be like this, because, well, there are some corner cases there which aren't treated very well, but I can then make it manually bigger, but now you see why it couldn't get any bigger. So if I'm going for filling the entire width, I can do... how's that working? I forgot it. And now... I'm in the view menu and fit to width. So... or fit to height. In this case, this is the same as optimal. And it has some, it's not continuous. As you can see, there's some steps, but there are many more steps than in vanilla. But this is really useful to have if you want to show something to students, or even if your eyes are as bad as mine are getting, as I'm getting older, that you yourself can read your own patch while you're on stage or something. Okay, so this is the other thing that I wanted to quickly show, but that's the basic part. Control zero takes you back to the original zoom, 100%. So, I think I'm through with the basic stuff and I lost my slides. Where have they gone? There it is. There we are again. So now I wanted to show some external programming with Lua. If I really explained all of Lua now, I'd really be stretching time and attention. So let's just say that Lua was invented by a guy named Roberto Jaruzelski and his colleagues in Brazil. And it was already invented in 1993. And I think that the history behind that is that at that time it wasn't really possible for Brazilians to take much software from outside, so they had to invent their own. Is this on? Okay, thank you. Okay, let's make a long story short. It was invented in Brazil and it became very popular in game programming, and it still is. And that's maybe a niche, but a very important one and a very well-paid one where more money is spent nowadays than for the entire Hollywood industry. So it's quite well known, not as well known as Ruby and Python maybe, but it's also a very nice language. I'd say I've been designing programming languages for quite some time, and I'd say it's better than Python. It has a nicer syntax. It doesn't have as many libraries. That's one thing, but it does have quite a few. So you can program with this language, and we were very lucky that Claude gave us PDLua in 2008 already. Always put it on the wrong way. Do we have sound again? Yeah, okay, great. So Claude wrote one of the best plugin loaders, as they're called in PD, which makes it possible to integrate objects written in other programming languages just as well as if they were written in C. Of course, they will run through a scripting engine, so they will be slower than a C external, but they'll be much easier to write if you use something like Lua. And that was done already in 2008, and the version that we've included now, I have a pointer for that up there. I think so. No, I forgot it. But you find that on my GitHub account. And the version we're using now works with Lua 5.3, and there's a few slides about how the syntax looks like. If you know these kinds of programming languages, this will tell you enough to start coding right away. If you don't, then I'm not going to be able to explain it in 5 minutes to you. So I'm just leaving that up to you to look that up in the slides. But I'm going to show you a real-life PDLua example, very basic, kind of Hello World example, as we computer scientists and programmers like to write. So, Lua has a kind of object system which is a bit unusual if you use to C++ or Java, or not JavaScript, decidedly, because JavaScript mimics Lua in that respect, and Lua itself goes back to a language, a very innovative language in the 1980s called Self. And Self was the first language which would do object orientation without having any object classes. You can do that, and one way to do that is to have so-called prototype objects from which other objects are derived. So for those in the know who have programmed C++, I know that there are many among you. And so this is a bit unusual, but it's not that unusual. JavaScript does it in the same way. It's also prototype-based object orientation. And what you do if you derive new objects from existing ones, you can just mix in all the methods that you want to add. And the way this is technically done in Lua is a bit more complicated, but I want to make long stories short today and concentrate on the practical aspects. So what we have here is basically a definition which uses Claude's plugin loader, or rather a class defined there to instantiate a new object, register it with the PD runtime, so that with the loader actually, so that the PD loader knows, oh, I'm supposed to call this loader. If I have an object, let's say it's called hello, then I'm supposed, or something else, then I'm supposed to ask this loader whether it can instantiate the object. And if that's the case, then it's done. Otherwise, it tries other ways. Or it will then use, it will try to instantiate a native object, which an internal built-in object, which in this case doesn't exist. PD doesn't have a built-in hello object. So it can only instantiate it through some other means, and in this case the means is provided by the PDLua loader, and it will then use the remaining methods to set up the object and provide whatever PD needs, which is a bit complicated in the details, in order to, for the external to work the way any external in PD does. Any external in PD has to provide a certain entry points. For instance, if I have objects have inlets. If I send some data to some inlet, then the object needs to be able to say, okay, I want to do with this, this and that with this, which is a piece of program code which gets executed through the runtime system of PD. And the details of this are very complicated, but PD Lua takes care of all the details, so you don't have to worry about it. All you have to do is to write a method like this. This colon here is not a typo. It's like a normal dot, which indicates, okay, this is object hello, and the function initialize, but it's just not any old run-of-the-mill function. It's a so-called method, which takes the object itself, the hello object itself, as its first argument, but you don't have to specify it. It's available under the name self. Self is like this in C++. So that's a bit of syntactic sugar for implementing objects in Lua. And so this is a special method which gets called when the object is instantiated at initialization time, which sets up how many inlets and outlets we want to have, in this case just one, and then another one which is special data for this class. I just took a counter as an example, which just has the value null, zero in the beginning. And then whenever I receive a bang on the first inlet, which is also the only inlet, but that's the convention which PD Lua uses in order to specify which message should be treated in which way. You can write any code here. You can output stuff from the outlet using this outlet method, and also specifying the index of the outlet. All indices in Lua are one base, or usually. And what we got here is, okay, whenever I receive a bang, I increment the counter, and then I just output the value of the counter as a float in PD. So floats are number objects in PD. And here is I have another method which is similar, but which takes a float argument, which is then in the parameter list. And I just, for example, I made this set the counter back to the value that I've given. And I can show you that in action. And you can find that example in the materials that are in the repository. So let's have a quick look at that. You will be more interesting examples in the repository. But just to quickly show this. So what should happen? We recall that, just getting rid of that synthesizer there. Let's make this a bit prettier. So, all the error messages are gone. If I press bang, it's supposed to increment the counter value and output it. So it will print it using the print object. So if I press bang once, I get a 1 here, 2 there, and so on. And the nice thing with the latest latest per data versions is that I can actually click these messages, and it will take me to the object, straight to the object which caused the printout. So this is useful for debugging purposes, for instance. So, and the other stuff that I said, I can reset the counter like this, and now it starts counting from zero again. So the first number it outputs is 1. Very simple example. There is a similar one in FIPS, which actually does some music, but I'm not going to explain it now. I can briefly show you the code. You can do this open, and then it will open it in your text editor. You might have to associate the PD Lua filename extension with the editor that you want. I'm using Emacs here. So this is from the structure. It's very similar to the hello example, but it calculates Fibonacci numbers and outputs them on two separate outlets. So outlet one outputs the first of the pair, output two the next, and if you know how Fibonacci numbers work, you start out with 0 and 1, and then you always take the sum of the previous two and throw away the oldest, and then you get 0, 1, you get the next one is 1, next one is 2, next one is 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 3 is 5, and so on. And you can do, you can make music with these, of course, but they're becoming more interesting if you take them modulus, if you take them, how do I say it? If you take a certain modulus class of these. Some interesting classes, so moduli, are 10, for instance, which has a period, produces a period of 60 different numbers until it wraps around, because it has to eventually. But you get a period of 60 different numbers if you put in the modulus 10, which means that all Fibonacci numbers will be taken modulo 10. And that produces interesting musical patterns. I can play these. But now I need another of Ruiz programs, namely Qcent, I can live without. And let's hear some of that. So I have two voices here, actually, for the first number and for the second number, which will be output. I'm just going to play them both now in concert. I also have a different transposition here, and that sounds like this. I also have a kind of metric environment here, which does some interesting rhythms, but I'm not going to explain it now. But that's also written in Lua. It's way more complicated than the Fibonacci numbers. Okay, not everybody likes that kind of music, but I assure you, your grandchildren will absolutely love it. So you have one way to make algorithmic music, but you can also use it to a certain extent to do audio stuff. But for like with Python, it's if you try to do busy loops with many samples in an interpreted language like Lua or Python, it's going to be kind of slow, so you might not work very well. But for doing control stuff, it's incredible what you can do with this. If you're thinking about making a gargantuan, ginormous subpatch to solve some problem, think again about whether you might be able to solve it better with Lua. So, and the last thing I wanted to talk about, just very briefly now, are the data structures. But I need to explain at least a bit about them before I can really go into this. What are data structures in PD anyway? Data structures, we know the name from the programming language C, for instance, structs, right? Data structures are aggregates of different data. So think of it like a field, like the different fields in a database which describe an employee record or something like that. That's too boring for music, of course, but in a similar way you can describe different attributes of an object like a note. And the thing that PD that's exactly what PD, the notion that PD uses here. But the idea that Miller had is to actually at the same time have a graphical representation of each such data object. And ironically, I don't understand really the naming there. He calls them scalars. They are all but scalars. Scalars are one single value normally in mathematics. And I know that it must be a game on words because Miller is a good mathematician, so he should know better. Actually, we're describing vectors of values here, and the representation of this vector can be any kind of graphical representation that PD allows you to do. And the simple example that I already showed you, I have a more complicated example of that here, but let's first take a look at the basic example once again. 5 minutes ago, I know. Always the same with me. Okay, so we have this very simple example. No, that's the wrong section. Data structures, there we are, scalars. So what we have here is actually is a data object. For instance, this triangle here has a height, and that's specified here in the Z value, and the color, which is specified in the Q value. And if I increase the Z value, you will see that it will go further down. Let's make that 50. Okay. And you see it's now bigger. And you can actually drag the object, or if you're not in edit mode, you can drag this tip here and it will increase the Z value. That's standard PD. Now for the PDL to org variation of this, which looks more like this here. Actually, I wanted to do that example interactively. It's not really that complicated once you know how to do this kind of stuff. But I'm a bit short on time now, so just take a look at the example. Open this subpatch, and the most important thing in here is, where's my pointer, is this declaration. And you find a similar declaration in the other example I just showed to you. So you give the structure a name, and you name and data type all the elements. So here I didn't bother about color here. I just have X and Y, which is always the X and Y coordinate where the object appears on the PD patch. And then you have the Z value, whose interpretation is free. And then I associated with that a drawing command, and this pretty much only does the triangle. It's just, let me see whether I understand that. These are the starting. So I'm drawing a polygon. This is the starting point of the polygon, next coordinate and last coordinate. And this is actually the tip of the triangle. And I've done things a bit differently here because I'm actually mapping the range minus 100, 200, 200, minus 100, which turns the coordinate around. Usually it will y going positive means going south, which is, well, the way the graphics are handled in SVG and in, or at least in PD. And but I turned this around so that positive C value will actually go north. And the other main difference here is that I actually define which kind of interface I want to have. If I have, this is just some graphical details, how I want the polygon to be filled, the stroke is just, that's ordinary SVG stuff. And the fill color, and this is the mouse interaction. So I asked for a drag interaction, and this means when I drag in this part of the object, this is just the other part I won't explain now, but I can show it to you. It's just that little rectangle on the side, which I can use to drag the entire object without going into edit mode. And this other part of the mouse interaction. Let me change the tip here of the triangle, which selects, as I've interpreted it in this patch, the velocity of the node. And the other thing is I can change the position. Vertical means frequency, and horizontal means the time position of the object, the way I've interpreted here. And then you get some music out of that. So it's basically a graphical score which we have here. And I can just push play here. Again, I can only apologize, but it's a very simple example. But you can do graphical scores like this, and you're not limited to triangles, of course. You can do anything which you can do with SVG graphics, like, for instance, this example. With the entire tiger is defined in here as a collection of paths in SVG. So you can do arbitrary graphics, and for instance, and that's really, David, the very last example, you can do knobs or stuff like that. So I can show you one of these examples just to finish off. That's some graphics that I found on the internet, and I just put the SVG paths into the definition of the data structure, and now I can control this knob here. And this is the way forward where we want to. There's still some stuff to be done there, but the idea is that you can have your libraries of custom interface elements, which you, if you want to do that in PD, in vanilla, without SVG graphics, the only way you can do that is in writing an external in C, an interface to some GUI kit or something. I see very many possibilities there, entire GUI libraries for PAR data emanating, and that's what I want to leave you with. I hope you had a kind of gentle introduction now to PAR data, and that I can motivate some of you to start using it. Thank you very much.